ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
Let's go to verse 26, our last verse.
Yadi sarvagraha tyagaha, yadi sarvagraha tyagaha, ashakyastarhi dhiyam vraja. Ashakyastarhi diyam vraja sharanam tadadinontaha sharanam tadadinontaha bahir vaisho nubhuyatam yadi sarva graha tyagaha ashakyaha tarhi diyam vraja sharanam tad adhinaha antaha bahihi va eshaha anubhuyatam. Let's look at the sandhi just for a minute in the last line. Sharanam tat adhinaha the antar antaha bahir bahihi va Asha, A plus A, Vriddhi letter, Vaishaha Anubhuyatam. Okay. So here, we'll go over this a little bit more, but I just want to make clear the, I just want to tell you what that says in the Bhasha, in the introductory, introductory statement, sentence for this verse, and then that'll help me to go back to the other ones I want to talk about. He says, from coming off of the last verse, he says, in this manner, the uttama adhikaranaha atma anubhava upaya abhidaya. He says, in this manner, having told or having made clear the means for experiencing the Atma Anubhava, the means for experiencing the Atma, the Self, for the Uttama Adhikari. So in fact, these last three verses, especially the last two, the Uttama Adhikari is the one, the most qualified student. I think I mentioned it in the last, it's kind of like Ramana. You know, Ramana, as the story goes, when he was a young boy, a teenager, he was lying on his cot, on his bed, and he just thought, I wonder what it would be like to be dead. What would that be like? And so he, just lying there and relaxed, he just tried to blot out the whole creation. You know, just shut it all down, shut the whole thing down, and then just see what would be left. So he's actually able to do that, maybe from some beautiful prarabdha or some scars that had come forward from the last life, but he was able to do that. And as he kind of shut down all of the perceptions of the external world, external means internal and external, any is shut down any experience, all that was left was the self, just me. Because all of the other experiences had been withdrawn. So even in meditation, like say in the Ashtanga Yoga, the practice of Samadhi, for instance, there is a step-by-step withdrawal of your sense organs into the mind, and then the focus on the mind is then turned inward. There's a lot of procedures involved in this withdrawal of the senses from any type of externalization, withdrawing them inward, turning toward the self until they as though release themselves. So there's a complete upasamshanti. There's a complete cessation of any experience of sensory perception because you've withdrawn the organs, the sense organs. You've withdrawn all of the sense organs, so you've gotten rid. You have a cessation of any type of external experience, and then you also then through various pranayama and whatnot, you also bring the mind into a state of being free of vrittis. So the mind also is not wandering around anymore. And then that vritti, those meditative practices, where that vritti now focuses really in the Sankhya Yoga on the Purusha, on the, well, for us would be on the Atma. And in the doing that, there's no mental experiences, there's no emotional experiences. The buddhi has come into a complete quietude and after having withdrawn all the sense organs. And so that's that upasamshanti. When that is done, all that remains at that time experientially is the self-evident Atma. Because what's interesting about this type of practice, if there's no knowledge involved, it's just the experience of non-dual Atma. But with knowledge involved, there's kind of, you know, it's all very, there's a good context for it. But when they're saying this upasamshanti, they're talking, and one way of talking about it is an awake mind that is withdrawing the sense organs, and then the sense organs into the mind, and then focusing the mind, doing certain practices with the mind, in order to resolve that just into the self. So in that situation, when that is done, right, there is only me. There's then that in this in the verse number 24, it says sarva graha upasamshantau. When there's this upashanti of all subject-object experience, which requires the mind. It requires the mind and sense organs to have a subject-object know or known, see or seen, or even what we call that sakshibhasya that illumines the mind. Right, that's sakshibhasya. That's still an experience. Like if I have an imagination, I mean, the consciousness is, the conscious being, me, is illumining that mind. So there's still subject-object. I am the subject as the sakshi, and the emotional state or the whatever the imaginal state, whatever it is, right, is what is being seen. So that duality is still there. But when all of the organs of knowledge, the five sense organs, and then the antakarana, that inner organ, which we call the mind, when all of them have stopped their activity, there's a cessation of any type of activity, that's called upasamshanti. So when that upasamshanti, that cessation of activity takes place at that time, only one's self remains. There is no more subject-object experience. And there's not even any ajnanam, right? Because the mind is awake. We have a kind of a lazy man samadhi, Swamiji joked once. When you go to deep sleep, naturally your sense organs and your mind go into an unmanifest condition, into a causal condition. And when that's the case, then the Atma is just illumining non-dual ignorance. You know, ignorance that is not the non-dual maya, ignorance that has not been differentiated. And so even though that's not exactly a samadhi, a nirvikalpa samadhi, where there is no ignorance, just the self, here there's the resolution of any kind of duality into its causal condition, and so the self now is not experiencing that duality or the emotions or reactions or whatever there is in the mind. So that the mind is illumining by its very nature that knownness, the knownness of me, the self-evident me, is reflecting off or illumining pure ajnanam, that causal condition. But still, it's very nice. And that's why they call it lazy man samadhi. It's very, very nice because it's a complete relaxation. I'm just relieved of all of the different variety of pressures and perceptions and agitations and things that naturally go on within samsara. I'm relieved of that. It's really nice to get a nice deep sleep so that you can come wake up refreshed. But here they're not talking about that deep sleep. They're talking about the mind actually just absorbing itself into just conscious being. So then you have consciousness, me, illumining, a vritti which has soul content, only consciousness. So there's no subject-object, there's just only the nature of the subject. So when that type of, when that takes place, also called an akhandakara vritti, or type of samadhi, savikalpa and nirvikalpa samadhi we're talking about, I recognize the aparoksha jnanam of myself. Again, aparoksha jnanam means there's no, it's not, the self-experience is just unimpeded by any type of subject-object relationship, and I am self-shining. It's not this knowledge isn't given, being given to me by a subject-object pramana, by the pramanas I use in the world. That's not giving me this. What's happening here in this particular verse is that I'm withdrawing all sensory perception and just recognizing this is me. This is all that I am and all that I need to be. So that's kind of a Ramana state. So what he says into the furthest verse 24, what he leads into that with that, as I read before, the question, the fear is from the previous verse, is that there's this question, you know, how can the self, which illumines everything else, because of what, which is a sakshi of all experience, when the self is the sakshi of all, it's a sakshi of all experience, the witness, the consciousness of all experience. That's great, but you also say at the same time that it's also a gochara. It can't be objectified by any of the means of knowledge that objectify all experience, which the self is the sakshi of, lends its consciousness to. But all of these means of knowledge can't turn around and know me. They're only good for experiencing the world. So the question he brings up here, well, if oneself really is a gochara, is cannot be recognized or known or experienced by the mind or speech, it can't be an object of knowledge for your sense organs or your buddhi or for speech, then the what they say is, if that's true, you know, if it can't be known by the mind or by speech, then how is a mumukshu going to know it? Mm-hmm. Mumukshu means the one who seeks liberation. Then you're saying, okay, this person wants liberation, but they can't have it because it's agochara. It can't be objectified by the means of knowledge you have available to you. And so this first verse 24 answers that question. He says, let it not be, you know, if you're saying that it can't be perceived by me, if you say that, then I say, you know, that's fine, let it not be perceived. It doesn't need to be perceived by you. The Atma doesn't need to be perceived by you. It's self-evident. You're already completely, fully present. And then, he says, when, just do this, withdraw all of your sense organs and mind in meditation, like in yoga, in meditation, just withdraw all of these sense organs, shut them all down, resolve all of them, then what? Who's left? Only me. Then you recognize that you don't need those sense organs, you don't need the mind, in fact, shut them all down. Resolve all of them, so that there's no objectified vritti, no objects there in the vritti. Just pull it all in. Who's left? When there's no perception, there's nothing being objectified that you think you need to know. Right? Nothing is being objectified. Are you not there now? Mm-hmm. Are you there or are you not there? The only one there is you. You are there. There are no sense organs. The mind is resolved. There's no speech. There is only you. So your being is free of all of these means of knowledge. You don't need them because you're still there and you're self-evident. And so you don't need your sense organs to objectify you. They can't objectify you, but you don't need them to objectify you. You're still there. So then in this verse 24, then he goes and he says, then this question comes in. Okay, well, even though I'm still there, You know? Even though I'm still there, when I pull in all of these sense organs, I'm the one left remaining. Okay, even though that's true, still some sort of nyaya, some logic has to be told. By logic, by nyaya, just don't let me be sitting there just as my non-dual self. Because when I come back from that there, then I think, what has happened? How did that happen? How did that happen? What is the relationship between me, my self-experience, and this universe of duality? My mind has a lot of questions. So he says, this ukta nyaya, even though the self, the atma, parishishate, alone remains, still, and I've given I've given a certain logic to it also. You know, as you as you withdraw the sense organs, the knower known relationship between the sense organ and sense object itself is withdrawn, right? And still I'm there. There's a little logic in that. Still I am there means my being, my self-evident being, the Atma, is not touched or dependent upon the world, basically. It's not dependent upon the knower, nor is it dependent upon the known. I withdraw all of it, and then here I am in my infinite nature, non-dual nature. That is what was left. So there's some logic there, but still, he says, still, tatapi, tad aparokshaya kinchit pramana apekshitam vityaha. He says, still, for the aparoksha jnanam of that, the aparoksha jnanam means I recognize, I know, I understand what is happening. He says, kinship pramana apekshitam. Some pramana we need. Some pramana is needed in order to know what the experience is and how that experience, with the relationship of that experience to the creation. Now I just had the non-dual experience, and I recognize that, and I recognize that non-dual experience is not necessary, nothing else is necessary for it. It's all resolved. But then that brings about a lot of questions. I've had that non-dual experience, but I come back from that non-dual experience. And then that one who comes back from the non-dual experience wants to understand. What's going on? What is this, and who am I, and what took place there, and what is my relationship to it? You know, what is my relationship to the whole creation that was blotted out? Including all the knower known relationship, all of that was blotted out, and then it comes back. What is that creation? Who am I? I need some knowledge. And so then, saying that, so therefore he says, natatra mana apeksha asti, he says, even though a pramana is not necessary for the experience of the self, it is self-evident. No pramana, no means of knowledge is necessary for that experience. That experience is independent. Why? Why does it not need the pramana, any kind of pramana? Swaprakasha surupata. Because it's self-evident. Swaprakasha, it's self-shining. It doesn't require pramana to light it up. No pramana necessary for the self-experience. Tadrik vyutpati apeksha chait. But you know, if you need some clarification around that, and having that tadrik, the self, recognizing the self as just non-dual me, says, apeksha chait, if you need, apeksha means need, if you have some need for some vyutpati means something needs to be, I need clarity, I need to understand it. So if there's a need for some clarity there, then they say, Shruti Patta Guru Mukhat. May you go to your teacher. May you go to a guru. May you study Patta. May you listen to the Shruti, the Upanishads, or the Prakarana Granthas, from the Guru Mukhat, from the mouth of the teacher. Means, may you listen to the Upanishads, which do just that. They give you logic and clarity and understanding of the totality of your experience, this creation, myself, the relationship of the self to the creation, the relationship of the jiva to the creation and to Ishvara, all of this becomes very, very clear when you're receiving the knowledge of the Upanishads. That's exactly what they do. The knowledge, the Upanishads themselves act as a pramana for the nature of remember the Samanya Jnanam is just I'm all there is. That's the Samanya Jnanam of just being me. But then comes all of the questions and the buddhi. The buddhi doesn't know what to do with that. It comes back and it knows that that's me, but who am I then? But yeah, this non-dual experience, just you, because you've withdrawn all the sense organs, and then the buddhi comes back and it knows that's the truth. But then it wonders, you know, who am I? The who am I question is still there, you know, and wanting clarification. But who am I in reference to that? You know, who am I in reference to this world? Who is Ishvara then? How does this non-dual me fit into the scheme of things? You know, so those questions come. And so if those questions, that need for clarity should come, as though it wouldn't, you know, maybe for the Uttama Adhikari, you know, but if that need for clarity comes, then go to the teacher and then go through that whole teaching to see, to recognize the context of all of your experience. And that's what a new Upanishad does. It clarifies everything to the great, great satisfaction of your mind. If your mind is not satisfied, then it has a doubt. It has to ask that. So that also is clarified. So that you see it. Clarified means you see it. You know, the ajnanam or the vagueness around that particular area is removed. And you go, oh, I see, I get it. I see, I understand. It's so freeing. Those moments of understanding, even in general world, in samsara, those moments of understanding are so gratifying. Mm-hmm. So the moments of understanding of your own being and your relationship to the whole creation is so, so gratifying to the mind. So he says, so if you need some clarity, more understanding, then may you listen to the shruti from the mouth of the teacher, of the guru. So then, now, in this last verse, he says, evam uktam adhikarinaha atma anubhavaha upayam abhidaya. So he says, now having told, in this last verse, really, having told the means the recognition of the Atma, for the Uttama Adhikari. So having realized how an Uttama Adhikari means the highest Adhikari. There's three qualified students, you know, three types of mumukshus. One is the Uttama Adhikari. Like in the Chandogya Upanishad, Shvetaketu was an Uttama Adhikari. He had to be told in nine times. I think it was nine times. He had to be told, yeah, I think it was seven or nine times, and let's make it nine. Nine. He had to be told by his father in about a 2-hour lecture, unfoldment, in nine different ways, the nature of the self. And by the ninth time, Shvetaketu said, I see. I have it. He understood. That's an Uttama Adhikari. You don't have to go on and on and on working on your mind and all this. That's already been done in past lives and in this life. Everything's fine. You just need a pramana to point that to. He's very beautiful. We all become Uttama Adhikaris as we go along. Right? So if the middling is the Madhyama Adhikari, needs more shravana. Need some work on the upaya on your mind and, you know, the complexes we have and all of those things that cause us pain. We need to do some work on that. We need to have more exposure to the pramana, not just a couple of hours. You know, for Ramana, the pundits came. Ramana was always just sitting and enjoying himself. But he really didn't have a context. He had antakarana shuddhi, just sitting there enjoying himself. And just turn inward. Just ask the who am I question. Ask who am I question. Just be with yourself. That's all. But when the pundits came and taught him the Upanishad, you know what his experience of the Upanishad was? That they were just perfectly describing the way things are. They were perfectly describing his nature, you know, the mityatva of the world. They're perfectly, just perfect. It just all fell into place. Yes, 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 that is how it is. Because he was already fully blossomed, you know, even in terms of his antakarana. So, yes, yes, yes. And you know what? After that, as the stories go, after the pundits came and taught him the Upanishads, the end of the Vedas, he went through those. Then he didn't meditate anymore. He stopped. Because there's no need. Mm-hmm. There's no need. Because if you just think of it, like even right now, if you say there's no agitation, if there's agitation in your mind, then that's going to be what's there. That's fine. But say there's no agitation, and here your eyes are open. And so what is there? Your eyes are open. So there's this display of color, this display of whatever your sense organs are perceiving. So there's you with this perceptual world that you're gaining through your sense organs. Okay, now, so just notice that. Then you close your eyes, and what's happened? Really, all that has happened is this display that you're gaining through the sense organs, this experience of the world that you're gaining through the sense organs, is just not there. Because you've included the closing of your eyes or withdrawing your sense organs, then that's just not being experienced. But it actually doesn't matter at all. It doesn't do anything to you. You're as much there with your eyes open or your eyes closed. So with your eyes open, then it is your being, the Satchitatma, with Namarupa. When your eyes are closed, you know, there's the same Satchitatma, the same me, you know, with the Namarupa not being experienced. Mm-hmm. But there's no change in what is actually here. That's why sometimes we use the dream example, right? In the dream, when the dream is happening, there's this display, but when you wake up from the dream, the display, the experience is gone, but nothing has happened, because nothing has happened to what is actually there. You know? That's why the dream is such a beautiful thing. So here, he says, having given the upaya the means for recognizing this, the Atma, having that recognition, that experiential self-evident me, having gained that through the means that have just been told, he says, now the manda adhikarinaha, 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 the manda adhikarinaha tam darashyati. He, for the dullest of the three, you know, he gives another way. He gives us another way of recognizing that. So it goes like this. What he says is, yadi sarvagraha tyagaha ashakyaha. He says, if ashakyaha means it is not possible. What is not possible? Sarva, you're not able. It's not able to be done. Shakyaha, ashakyaha. What is? Sarvagraha tyagaha. If you're not able to give up, to let go of all of the seer-seeing perceptions that make the seer-seeing perceptions, if you're not willing to let that go, you know, because no, that's me, you know? No, I'm not, that's me.
Not that one.
Yeah, because even to let go, the identity is so much with your mind and your buddhi. I remember the first time I was in Rishikesh with Swamiji, and Swamiji was teaching, and sometimes in the first few months or so, Bhagawan kind of gives you an initiatory dose. Because of the shock of this knowledge, it just shakes you to your roots. It's an amazing thing. You know, and so I remember during that first month in Rishikesh, we were there for 2 months. I recognize that that the self was not me. Now, of course, that's not true, right? But that this buddhi that I was totally identified with, my mind, this person, not just my buddhi, but this whole body, mind, sense organs that made me, that no, this was not the self. And my mind freaked out. I was just taking a walk, and I was in such an absorbed, beautiful state, and all of a sudden, the mind freaked out. It's just like, what? What? Yeah. I was very, And so I had to kind of wait that out, let it settle down. And then after a few days, it became all right. But it was a great shock, and it scared me. It scared my mind. My mind thought it was going to die, you know? It was dying. It was going to be killed. Something like that. It was rare. So what he says is, if you're not able to handle that, you know, that tyaga, if that kind of that renunciation or giving up of that identity, sarva graha, that seer seeing, you know, I am the knower. That is who I am. I'm the subject of aware of all of these objects. And then you realize, no, what you thought with the subject is itself an object. Mm. You know, and then the mind is saying, don't do that. Don't do that. Please don't do that. Don't do that. No. You know? And so it hangs on for its life, you know?
Yeah.
So if that tyaga, that letting go, is something ashakya, it's not able to be done. If that's the case, then dhyam vraja, go to your buddhi sharanam for protection, for refuge. Then focus on your buddhi. Hang on to your buddhi now for protection. Hide out in your buddhi, you know. So now you're going to, okay, thank you. I'm going to hide out in my buddhi. I get to live for a while, okay. Then what it says, so doing that, tad adinaha antarbahir va eshaha anubhuyate. Now, what this says is, it says it better in the Bhasha. If in the Bhasha, this last sentence, because it breaks it down in a much easier way, because the Panchadashi is very terse. So that's in the Bhasha, it says, Buddhya yet parikalpyate. He says, whatever is whatever is imagined by the buddhi, means whatever vritti is there, whatever content arises in the buddhi, like it could be the content, could be an imagination, it could be a perception, it could be emotion. So whatever content that takes place in the buddhi, okay? That content, he says, bahyam antaram va, whether it be internal or external. So internal content would be like the vritti, the buddhi vritti, it's having an imagination, it's having a memory, it's having a meditative experience, it's doing inner child work. These are all inner type of experiences. The experiences that appear to be outward, appear to be, are the experiences that the buddhi has that are generated by your sense perception. In either case, this is wonderful to realize this, in either case, whether the content of the buddhi vritti comes from externally through sense perception, it's still inside, or it's the content of the buddhi, but it's generated through sense perception of those things that are outside. Or it's a perception in the sense of its content is inner. Like I say, a memory, an imagination, an emotion, or a meditative experience, a fantasy, whatever, just thinking. So you're just lost in your thoughts, like Einstein. Einstein, he just spent a lot of time inside, just in his mind, figuring things out. Yeah. So whether internal or external, inside or outside, whatever that vritti has in terms of content happens to be, whatever content arises in the vritti, he says, tasya sakshitvena tad adinaha. He says, that which has arisen, is all of those things, because of being the sakshi, are dependent on the witness, are dependent upon the self. And so what you see, so this is very a very nice exercise. You can take it two ways. Whatever is being, so this is the first level of it, okay? So I'll just give it by levels. The first level of that is that whether the experience is inside or outside, the experience you're having is dependent on the buddhi, right? You're not actually having an experience of something outside. You're having an experience of the vritti. Mm-hmm. You see? Whether it's inside or outside, whether it's a meditative experience, an imaginal experience, doesn't make any difference, or a perceptual experience, what is being experienced is the buddhi. So the buddhi is necessary, absolutely, for the perception of the experience. So you don't experience inside or outside, really. You just experience what is ever there in the vritti, and you label it inside or outside in relation to what it is. If it's an experience that's taking inside internally to the body, it's inside. If it's taking externally to the sense perception, it's outside. But actually, what is actually happening is that the buddhi that you're experiencing, the inside and outside are just the content of that vritti. There is no inside or outside. And now, so that vritti, which is neither inside or outside, in terms of the inside, okay, the vritti, the content of the vritti is not outside, and the content of the vritti is not inside. Now the inside and outside exist in the vritti. Mm-hmm. Like if you have a vritti of an imagination, it's three-dimensional, right? So this idea of inside and outside, if you still have that, that's existing inside the vritti itself. See what I mean? So now it says, in the same way, you know, like that, the Paramatma itself is being experienced as the Sakshi. The Sakshi, being the Sakshi, being the witness of the vritti, for the Sakshi also, there's no inside or outside, right? The inside and outside now belongs to the vritti, because it's contained in the vritti, and that vritti is known. The vritti is known. So the vritti itself, which has inside and outside now, everybody with me on that? Because the vritti itself has inside and outside, that vritti itself is illumined. It is known. So as the sakshi of the vritti, you know, keeping the vritti there, recognize your being as the sakshi, which itself is free of inside and outside. It's illumining. So go at it that way. Be gentle, you know. Allow your buddhi to do the job. Let there be sharanam in the buddhi, and then recognize that buddhi has a sakshi, you know. And concentrating on that sakshi, recognize yourself. Hiding in the buddhi, hiding out in the buddhi, accepting the buddhi, recognize the sakshi, the one who is the witness of that. And so therefore free witness of it, and free of it, free of the buddhi. And see, there's another part to this. When you recognize that whatever you're experiencing really is only the buddhi, so the three-dimensional world, you know, with all emotions and everything, that three-dimensional world is now there in the buddhi, right? The buddhi is obviously mithya. The three-dimensional world that you're experiencing has not entered into the buddhi. So the buddhi can get rid of that three-dimensional world in half a second. You're going to have another three-dimensional world. Or just shut the whole thing down completely. So the mithyatva of all experience becomes very clear from the standpoint of the buddhi. But now, as the sakshi, as these vrittis keep going and going and going, one replacing the other, all of them now being reduced to mitya, because the vritti, if you understand the relationship of the vritti to the world internally or outwardly, you're experiencing the vritti, and you know your vritti, your mind doesn't carry around these three-dimensional experiences, you know, and yet there they are, you know, so that mityatva you get gets really solid then. And now you recognize this, that the sakshi, the conscious being, the me, the sakshi, the knownness of these three dimensional vrittis that are taking place, never changes. This vritti goes, this vritti goes, it comes, it stays, it goes. The sakshi always remains. So differentiate the knownness of the vritti, you know, from the vritti. The knownness, the self-evident atma, it never comes and goes. It always remains, and the vrittis come and go in it. And what comes and goes in it? A three-dimensional universe in the contained in your vritti, you know? A three-dimensional room with many people in it, contained in your vritti. That's maya. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing. And what is stable in all of that? The sakshi. So try to understand from that perspective, he says, and all will be well. Om Tat Sat. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.